It's time for the Cheap and Chad's Power Half Hour.
Welcome one, welcome all, welcome back to the best and only podcast that features our league of record. We're joined again by none other than himself, Chief. How you doing tonight?
Chief is back from his hiatus from the Chief and Chaz podcast. It's been a minute. We've had a rotating cast of guests, kind of like when Charles Nelson Reilly would go do a Broadway play on Match Game. They would fill his seat on the top right row. But I am back from my hiatus. Nobody's going to get that reference, but I don't care.
All right. Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously it's a hiatus for us when we're in the summertime, and I threw out a couple podcasts basically on my own or with other people, and but I'm glad that we're now back committed to getting this out at least once a week for the season, so this should be fun. So, you know, this is our second season now going into this, and if you remember last season, we were cranking out content during the month of August like crazy.
Yeah, we were cranking out content, and then Jimmy Butler had to ruin my life for 2 months. So, you know, real world impact has an impact on the Chief and Chaz podcast. Everything was fine and dandy during August when nothing was going on. And then once September rolled around, it was like, oh, shit. Yeah. So hopefully nothing like that happens this year. Things are very calm around the Timberwolves right now. We'll see. So hopefully this year will be better, both from a content standpoint and from a Hino does his weekly observations and podcast duty standpoint.
Well, we all want that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We shall see.
Yeah. You may have noticed by now, folks, if you're listening at home, that the sound is a little bit different. Obviously, not crazy about the quality of the recordings that we've done previously, so we're trying out some new methods. So hopefully this one works better. I won't know until we're in post-processing. But that, because I'm going to be going into post-processing now for these chats, you know, with Chief, which I didn't do previously in last year's episode. I pretty much just released the raw ones. These are going to be a day or so delayed from when I do them, from when we record them. So hopefully I can still get this pumped out by tomorrow, which will be Friday. So at least we'll get it out once a week, with, you know, as long as we record, I would say probably by like Tuesday, you know, I can have it out by like Thursday, give or take.
With but one note about tonight's podcast, Chaz has asked me to speak louder than I normally would into the phone. So if at random times you hear me start talking like this, it's because Chaz has asked me to do that. It's not because I'm doing an impression of Will Ferrell's voice and modulation character from Weekend Update on SNL. Nobody's going to get that reference either, but I don't care. But there might be times where my voice sounds really like this, and then it might come in like this. So just, you know, everybody be aware.
All right, fair enough. All right, so let's get to it. So obviously the big news that dropped last week was that Ryan would be leaving the league, and we spent a lot of time debating this week of who that replacement should be, and it looks like we now have that replacement in Mrs. Gates herself, Rachel.
Yeah, very excited for Rachel to join the league. Sad to see Ryan go. He became a very good foil for me in recent years, but with his propensity to draft white pass catchers and his propensity to have really bad luck when it came to his record versus his expected record. And especially because one of those losses came at my crushing losses came at my expense in the 2016 season, which is very exciting for me when that happened. We all know it as the Sproles springboard, when Darren Sproles on the final play, the final meaningless play of a 2-score or 3-score game that the Eagles were losing to the Packers, takes a dump off pass as the clock runs out to give me the victory. Sorry that Ryan never really got a chance to redeem himself from that loss, but his track record in the league is better than you will give him credit for, Chaz, because I know you think that Ryan basically just sucked air for 9 years in the league.
I don't think he sucked air. I don't really remember anything outside of him drafting two tight ends, which was him, right? Not Jake.
Right, that was him. He loved to draft two tight ends.
I'm just messing with you. I know it was him. Outside of like him drafting two tight ends, I don't remember anything memorable from his team or stuff that he did. I'd be curious to know what his actual record is. I'm sure Mancuso can update us in the chat.
Hey, well, he did. Joe Mancuso, funny you should ask. Joe Mancuso gave me a year-by-year breakdown of Ryan in preparation for this podcast. So hat tip to Joe there.
Okay, well, thank you. So why don't we do this? Why don't you name some categories, and I'll try and guess like what his stats were. And then we'll see how.
I don't have his stats. I just have his record year by year.
Okay, that's fine. Let's do his record, because I mean, if you think I think he was worse than he is, then this will prove me wrong, right?
Okay, let me see if I can add the numbers really quick in my head here. All right, so we've got this would be 9 seasons worth of auction years. So okay. 9 seasons. So you got to do the math for 9 years. I'm going to take a minute to add the numbers. Go ahead.
Okay. Fair enough. I mean, well, in regular season, that'd be 117 games. So I guess it just matters how many times he made playoffs. So, we have 9 years of the league. So I'm going to guess that he made playoffs 4 times. And so I'm going to assume that he only got out of those 4 times, and I'm going to assume he only got 5 games. So
hang on, I was listening to you, and I lost count.
I mean, just give me the total number of games. I'm assuming it's somewhere around 121.
Well, total number of games is going to be 13 times
9, which is 117 plus playoff games, right? Or is what he?
Well, let's just do his. You just guess his regular season record
okay.
for purposes.
I'm
going to
guess.
Exercise.
Okay, all right. So
we have 100. I will tell you that there is one tie in there. So
okay,
one,
fair enough.
You have one tie.
I'm going to assume that he has 68 wins, and whatever the reverse of that is, 68 wins and 49 losses. So that would be 58. Percentage win percentage, although I guess if you count that one tie, but I'm not doing that. So
you said how many wins?
68.
68.
68
no,
and 49.
It was 48 wins.
Wow. So he was worse than I thought.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. It was 2 years in particular really brought him down, and it was last year when he went 2-11, and it was 2010 when he went 1-12. So,
wow.
You know, those 2 years, that's a lot of losses to take in 2 years.
Sure.
23 losses over 2 seasons. Throw that out, however, and he had a couple seasons under 500 and a couple over 500.
So I was just giving him a 58% win percentage. So what you're saying is that he's worse than I thought.
Yes, it would appear that way, yes.
Well, then it would seem I'm justified for thinking he sucks air, as you said.
maybe a little bit. Well, of late, I will give Ryan credit for this. Over the last 4 years, he really picked up his game. In the first 4 years of the Auction League's existence, he was only over 500 1 year. That was 2011 when he went 8-5. He lost to his brother in the playoffs because that was obviously the asterisk year for Gelch. So he went into the playoffs with a loaded team, therefore wreaking havoc over everybody else. And he scored, apparently Matt Gelchin scored 157 points mm-hmm. to eliminate his brother from the playoffs in the 2011 asterisk season.
Right.
So number his next best year was 2014. This is when he really started to pick it up in the league. Fell in the first round of the playoffs to TJC, who got 29 points from the Rams defense in 2014.
Wow.
Interesting. I wonder what the matchup was that week. Yeah. Also, 24.5 points from Eddie Lacy to eke out an eight and a half point playoff win in the 2014 playoffs. Let's see. 2015, another strong year for Ryan. He went 8-5. Let's see. But he lost to the juggernaut that was the Cam Newton MVP season for Mike. Mm-hmm. Who had 41 points in their playoff matchup. That's a tough one to overcome.
Yeah.
2016, Ryan went 7-6. That was the year of the Sproles springboard. But I will add that that was just karma coming back around to bite him for the Snead sneakery, which happened in week three.
Sure.
And we all know what happened with the Snead sneakery. You know, Ryan ends up getting Michael Thomas from Mike, and Michael Thomas turns out to be a stud. Yet Ryan only goes 7-6, but 7-6 that year was not good enough to make the playoffs. At least in the tiebreaker scenarios that happened. 2017, Ryan goes 6-7, despite drafting on paper a very good team. This was the year he drafted Alvin Kamara for $3. He scored 109 points per game, which Joe Mancuso says in his notes is, quote, ridiculous for a 6-7 team. He was the second leading scorer in a down scoring year, but he still went 6-7 and missed out on the playoffs. And then last year he only went 2-11 because he drafted too many white pass catchers. So, yeah, interesting history for Ryan, one marked by either, you know, a couple bad years, and then when he did get into the playoffs, and when he had a good team, either marked by bad luck league-wide or bad luck once he got to the playoffs, you know, one from, you know, obviously the asterisk season, and then a couple other just tough matchups in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm curious to know what my record is, because I honestly think I'm probably only around 50%. So it's like only a tick better than he would have been. So Joe, maybe you can update us with those stats. I think you have previously in the chat, but please let us know afterwards. Any other parting thoughts of Ryan before we move on to talking about our new league mate, Rachel?
You hate to see anybody go. I wish he had engaged in more trade talk over the years. I would put Ryan in the category of those hardest to trade with. And I think
Joe made fun of me for my trade offers.
Joe had some numbers here. Let's see. He made 4 trades total during 9 seasons.
That's insane.
4 trades. That's 5 less than the next closest in terms of fewest trades.
Is that Mike? Do you know?
He does not list that.
Okay.
He made approximately 14 roster moves per season. The only other person that makes fewer is Mike. So either he nails his draft and he has a good team, or he doesn't nail his draft and his team suffers because of his substandard draft.
And you know, that I think that brings back a good point. That was one of the things that we talked about last year, which was that you don't win the championship at the draft. You create a stable base, but a lot of the times winning the league happens in season with your waiver pickups, with trades, with things like that. And so now knowing this information, I'd be really curious if Mancuso, and again, I'm putting a lot of pressure on you here, I'd be really curious to know if you look at people's waivers and trades and then compare that to how they've fared in terms of win percentage and also championships. And I imagine there's going to be a positive correlation between people.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting you bring that up, because as you were saying that, I was just going through the list of winners in my head. 2018, Joe won in 2013 and 2018. And Joe made a lot of moves and a lot of trades throughout the season. I made a lot of moves when I won in 2017. Gelt made a lot of moves in 2010 and 2011. But if you look at the other title winners, Mike has won in the auction league twice, 3 titles overall. Wine Coop basically nailed his draft in, was it 2014? That he, you know, rode like DeMarco Murray all the way to the title.
Sure.
And Gelch's 2016 team, he didn't make a lot of trades because, you know, nobody wants to trade with Gelch. He was still, you know, on his 5-year frozen ban from trading with the league. It's kind of self-imposed. So he didn't make a lot of moves on that 2016 team. He just rode, you know, a couple horses to the title. So, you know, you can do it both ways. You don't have to make a ton of moves or a lot of splashy moves during the year to win a title in this league.
Sure, but I'm going to assume that's more the exception to the rule, because it's one of those things where you, in my general view, you don't win the title, you don't win your league at the draft, but you sure damn can lose it. And yeah, maybe that's a confluence of events where he just, all his players worked out well, nobody got hurt, but I still believe that that's probably the more the exception than the rule.
I would agree with you, and obviously I put, you know, my money where my mouth is, because I make a lot of moves and a lot of trades during the year. So I feel the same way, that, you know, you really need to keep improving your roster, because once it gets down to the playoffs, you better have a great team, or else you're not gonna withstand other people that have done the same thing and assembled, you know, potentially a great team for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cool. So let's move on. Let's talk about Rachel a little bit. Now, I happen to have experience playing with Rachel. Rachel took over a team in my family league. It's a 10-team league. Gates is also in the league, and she took over for my cousin Lucy. And if memory serves, she actually took over I can't remember if she took over like right after the draft or if she took over right before the draft with very little prep. But that year she went on to win the league, and she's basically been in the playoffs almost every year since. Now, that's not saying a ton, because in my family league, of the 10 people, you probably only have like 6 people that are like legitimately like really good, talented, I would say, players. The other 4 are more casual.
Yeah.
But she's very good around a roster. She knows what players to pick up. I think if I remember correctly, that year she grabbed Gronk, and that was his most recent go crazy year, because I think it was 2 or 3 years ago that he went bananas, and that's basically what ended up helping her win the league. So I have the experience with her. She knows what she's doing. I'm really interested to see how she drafts, because obviously we're an auction league. I don't know if she has a lot of experience with that. And I'm also interested because she's been around Gates up to now. So she may have inferred some of Gates' strategies and players and people that she likes. So I'm curious to know if that messes up, you know, Gates and Coop's draft strategy, or what her general strategy will be.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You know, hopefully when it comes to learning from what her husband has done, hopefully she learned more of what not to do than what to do, given Gates' history leading up to last season. So hopefully she was taking some mental notes in 2016, 2017, and 2015.
Yeah, I mean, rule number one is use your whole budget. Or use most of your budget.
Don't end up with
$34 left.
Even now that James White is a viable fantasy football player, you still do not want to spend $33 on James White. Not a good idea. Yes, use your budget. I am very excited to have Rachel in the league. I think she's going to be great. I'm very excited to see her reaction when I start trash talking her on the weekly observations, and potentially in the Hino Hex column following the draft. You know, we'll see. But I am super excited to have her in the league.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited also because, and I realize this is somewhat of a sexist thing to say, but I'm excited that she's a girl, right? And I'd be saying this if it was her or Claire.
I bet she's excited that she's a girl too, Chaz.
She is, I'm sure. I just mean that I like that, you know, we have some diversity in the league in terms of backgrounds. Obviously, you know, fantasy football tends to be a more male-dominated thing. So I'm glad that, you know, we were able to even have a few people of the opposite gender that are interested in that, want to do this. So I just feel like it's going to make for a better league. And also, I'm not going to be surprised if Rachel is pretty good at smack talk.
I'm very excited about that. I think she's going to be.
Yeah. So, I mean, on that note, I mean, we should talk about the rivalry aspect, because obviously this shakes things up a little bit, and kind of what do we think are the optimal pairings for her, right? And I know it's been discussed in the chat, obviously, but I mean, what are your thoughts as far as who should, you know, do we really shake things up, or do we try and find two rivalries and, you know, try and change it from there, only affect those 4 people and kind of switch them back and forth? Or do we make it 6 or even 8 people that we're affecting by this rivalry switch up?
Well, I mean, it's going to affect almost, you know, everybody. The only way we don't affect things is if we just put Rachel in Ryan's slot and have her be a rival of with Jake, somebody who, I, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, probably I don't believe Rachel has ever met Jake. So kind of tough for them to be rivals if they haven't really don't know each other. So, you know, we're going to have to maybe shift some things around. It means Jake would need some sort of rival. And honestly, the two most logical choices are either his brother Joe or me, because he and I have been frequent trade partners. I, you know, supposedly chased him from the group chat during the 2017 playoffs. So there is some history there for Jake and I to be rivals. But Joe and I are the founding rivalry of the league, the reason that there are rivals in the first place. So I don't know if we want to do that. I don't know that I want to break that up. I don't know if we want to break, you know, you guys up potentially, you and Gelch. To me, I mean, Rachel's natural rival is Goop, both given, you know, Gates and given how much Dr. Weinkoop said that he would like to beat Rachel at this. So to me, that would be the most natural pairing, but I leave it up to others to decide that.
That's fair. I mean, I think if we're looking at the surface, right, part of the rivalry is people that you have a lot of interaction with, right? So by that nature, obviously Goop is a contender. I think Kat's a contender. And then also, I think Johnny could also be a contender, mainly just because, you know, she spent a lot of time with him. So, you know, there's nobody else in the league besides those people that she spent the most amount of time with. And so I think it's natural that it's one of those three should end up being it. I feel like having it be Goop is a little bit on the nose. You know, that'd be like having me and Kat be rivals. Like, I realize in that instance it's more Weinkoop than it is Gates. But for that reason, I feel like it should actually really be either Kat or Johnny. So let's pose that out. Let's assume that it's going to be Johnny or Kat. In the case of Johnny's current rival is Goop. Right?
Right.
So that would mean that Goop would need to change their rival. So who do you pair then with Goop? I mean, theoretically, I feel like anybody could do Goop. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Maybe we need to think about this more about Jake, because
that's Rachel, what I'm saying. Rachel, that's what I'm saying. Because you're not slotting Rachel into Ryan's slot and just saying, okay, you and Jake are rivals. You have to almost figure out who is Jake going to be paired with first before you can put all the others into place.
Sure.
Because you're always going to have an odd number out, somebody who's going to have to go with Jake, you know, no matter which way you slice the other ones.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. So then who in that instance, and from taking it from that angle, who interacts with Jake the most outside of Joe? I mean, Kuso. I mean, does anybody really interact with him?
I would probably say in the context of this league, probably me. That's what I was saying, because, you know, we Jake and I, Jake has been like my most frequent trade partner over the last few seasons. So, and I knew him, you know, when Joe and I used to hang out back in Scranton over breaks and things like that. Jake was also, you know, hanging around as well. So Jake does know me probably better than anybody else in the group besides his brother. But like I said, I'm okay with breaking up Joe and my rivalry. You can keep us in the same division. That way, you know, we at least have to face each other in the Johnny Jamboree week one, and then we play each other later in the year, you know, when it's playoff seeding and things like that.
Okay.
So I would be okay with that.
That from there, then, who do we make Joe's rival?
Right. Now you have a lot of possibilities here. Yeah. Now, if you want to put Rachel, so let's say, you know, you keep you and Gelch together, me and Jake. Let's put Johnny with Rachel, like you said, right?
And then Goop and Joe.
And then maybe Goop and Joe, right? And then you've got Kat versus Mike. as the other one.
Yeah, I mean, you could do Kat and Goop, right? Kind of reignite the old rivalry there of her and Gage.
Right.
You could do that, and then put Mike
with Joe. Yeah,
that's also
that could work as well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So some stuff to think about. I mean, obviously, I think we need to come to a decision pretty quickly as a group, so that way we can get a schedule put together and people can start throwing out some fire.
That's very natural. Me going with Jake creates a lot of natural kind of rivalries among the remaining eight people that have to be slotted with each other.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Okay. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. So let's move on to the next topic, which is I threw out in the group chat that we're recording right now. I don't know if you've noticed. So
I haven't been checking it, no. Because okay, I stay focused on this, on our conversation, Jazz. I'm not dilly-dallying around the internet.
Well, I tell you
chatting
what,
with other people while I tell we're you doing what, this podcast. This gets my 100% focus.
This gets my focus too. And I'll tell you why I did it, because I solicited questions.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's fair then.
So I've got a whole bunch of questions for us to talk about.
Before we get there, let's
talk about some recent news that has happened in the league. Obviously, training camp's underway. You have the main first preseason games going on today, starting today. You've already started seeing some injuries. The big news of today was that Duke Johnson got traded to the Texans. Now, this I saw coming from a mile away, mainly for two reasons. Number one, there was a lot of talk about Gordon, potentially being a trade candidate. But that's not possible because Lamar Miller, actually, people don't realize, is like the eighth highest running back being paid right now. So the Texans have already committed a lot of money to Lamar Miller. And Duke Johnson, if people remember, signed a contract a year or two ago, and he's like the 10th or 11th highest paid running back in the league. So there was no way that the Texans were going to be able to trade for Gordon without maybe trading Miller away, because they already had so much committed. Mm-hmm. So,
right,
you know, when Duke Johnson requested the trade, when they cut Donta Foreman, who was picked up by the Colts to be basically
right,
a fill-in fodder because Spencer Ware got injured, to me, it seemed like a really natural pairing. This is going to be really great for Deshaun Watson, because Miller is not really a pass-catching running back. So he's got that third down, change of pace back. It's great for Nick Chubb, because now he's basically got the majority of that backfield to himself for the first eight games. Once Hunt comes in, though, I really don't know what's going to happen with that, because if you compare those two talents, to me, Hunt is the better talent than Chubb. It's just a matter of, is he going to be in shape? Is he going to learn the playbook? All that stuff. So it works out well for both teams. I'll be really curious to see how things pan out, more for Chubb once Hunt comes in rather than Duke's. I think Duke's going to fit in pretty naturally, and he's going to get a lot of checkdowns, and he's going to get his work.
Yeah, I like the move from the Texans' point of view.
And for
like
a fourth rounder, too.
Yeah, it might be a bit of a high price. I don't know. I don't know what the going rate. Fourth rounder is, I don't know, not a great price to pay for a backup running back. I don't know, but I would have rather given up like a sixth round pick or something like that. But like you said, with the Cleveland situation, Nick Chubb could look like a potential MVP over the first 8 weeks or so, or however many games Hunt is suspended. But we saw this even last year with Alvin Kamara, and even though Kamara still put up numbers, once Mark Ingram got back in the fold after a suspension, Kamara did come down a click from his ridiculous start.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So there probably is going to be some sort of tail off for Nick Chubb once Kareem Hunt does get back in the fold there. I think it's only natural to assume that if you're Cleveland, this is why you stuck your neck out from a PR standpoint to bring in a guy who was seen on video kicking a woman. You're not going to bench him. So, that's it's interesting where you think you might want to pick Nick Chubb and what your expectations are for him, in the second half of the season.
Yeah, fair point. Another player that's stirred up a lot of controversy in the past couple of days is Antonio Brown. There are pictures that came out that he saw a foot specialist, and if you've seen the pictures, it's disgusting. Supposedly, he did something with a cryo chamber. And athletes are big into the cryo chamber stuff, where you get, really freezing air rushed over your body to help. But apparently he didn't wear the right footwear, and that's caused this injury. And what's interesting about this is that he's basically said nothing. Because, and from what I'm reading online, because this potentially was a non-team sanctioned thing, apparently he did it somewhere over in Europe. If that's the case, and he did it on his own, he might be subject to getting some of his pay cut or taken back from the Raiders, because that's usually a part of their contracts, is that if you get injured in a non-football way, that they're able to come after you and take some of your salary back. So he hasn't said anything, and I'm just wondering if that's because that's the case, and maybe he's just trying to, you know, wait for something. But I mean, it doesn't look good, and from all indications, it's probably, you know, a 1 to 2 month issue. One of the runners for the U.S. Olympic team, Michael Gatlin, I believe is his name, talked about how he had a very similar injury a while back, and it took him 2 to 3 months to get back to full form, where he was able to really run and put pressure on his feet and stuff. And he had, you know, you're having blisters popped every day, because it's liquid nitrogen. It's nitrogen that's being put over your body. So that's, you're talking like negative freezing cold. So it's similar to frostbite, which is, and if people don't know, frostbite is when the water in your cell, so your cells, starts to freeze, right? So that's what liquid nitrogen literally can do to you. And so it can be a really devastating injury, even something maybe that you couldn't even necessarily come back from, it, depending on how bad the severity it is. So to me, that really makes things interesting for Josh Jacobs. It really makes things interesting for Tyrell Williams, because all of a sudden those are two guys who might see an increased work share, because especially at least early on because of this, because Brown still has not practiced with the team at all.
Yeah, he's got to be just tumbling down draft boards everywhere. And I don't know how much of the Oakland offense I want to be invested in.
Yep.
I feel like Josh Jacobs is the candidate this year for Mike to say, "Who the fuck is Josh Jacobs?" during the draft, as his as his price starts to escalate a little bit, a la Doug Martin in whatever year Doug Martin was a rookie. Other than that, I don't know how much interest I have in that offense.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. All right. So now let's get to some of our user submitted questions from the chat. So the first question comes from Ancuso. He asked, thoughts on most optimal rival pairing. So I guess we talked about that. Player you're most intrigued to see how the league values them. For me, it's going to end up being a guy like Chubb, who, by all accounts, and we talked about it, by all accounts, should have a good workload, but because of the threat of Hunt, who is probably the best backup in the league, you know, I think that's going to tamp down the expectations for him. You know, Chubb's one of those guys that, you know, you might get him early. It's almost like if you get Chubb, you almost have to draft Hunt, not only for injury, but also because you're not going to be able to even move Chubb at any part during the year, because his value is going to be suppressed, because people will be like, well, he's got Hunt coming in, so he's going to lose some touches to him. So I'm really interested to see where he ends up going. If I had to guess, I would guess he's going to go high 30s, low 40s. That's my guess. But I really have no idea.
Yeah, I would say probably somebody like Damian Williams. Now, here's a guy, you know, obviously you've seen what the ceiling is. If you're the Kansas City running, if you're the main guy on this Kansas City offense, with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, right? But is Damian Williams going to be the guy all season? And I'm not convinced that he's going to be. I have Damian Williams in a keeper league, and I'm probably not going to keep him. I have James Conner and Keenan Allen as well. This is a PPR league, and I'm probably going to pick Allen and Conner as my two keepers. I'm going to throw Damian Williams back, because I just don't have the confidence that he is going to be the guy for 16 games this season.
I totally get that. You know, it's what's odd is that, you know, Andy Reid has come out and said previously, you know, Damian Williams is our starter, right? And he's been saying that, but Damian Williams has had a hamstring injury basically all through the season, the preseason so far for camp. And whether or not people realize this, Damian Williams has never had more than 150 carries in the season in his career. He's been in the league for like 6-7 years. He's been a backup his whole entire life. So,
and hasn't he had problems with injuries?
And he has had problems with injuries in the past. And then just today, Andy Reid was on the NFL Network on Sirius and talked about how they're going to use running back by committee. Right, so all of a sudden, that means that you've got him, you've got Carlos Hyde, you've got Darwin Thompson, and you've also got Darrell Williams in that backfield. So, you know, that's another situation. That's going to end up being like the Bucs backfield a couple years ago, where all of a sudden they might be spreading out the touches so much where all those guys are just not even worth a roster spot potentially. Williams, I think, will be initially, but I wouldn't be surprised if he cedes carries to Carlos Hyde, who honestly isn't that much. I would be more looking towards a Darwin Thompson kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm really concerned about that backfield. That's why I'm intrigued to see how much he's going to go for, because there's so much uncertainty there. The upside is potentially, you know, number one, number two, number three, top five running back. But the downside could also be so great.
Yeah, I'm going to guess a high 20s, low 30s for him. That's my guess.
Low 30s feels about right.
Yeah, I'll say like $32. All right, next question. What chances do the odd makers give each member of the league? Oh, geez. Okay, so I think the obvious ones that are like, you know, 2-1, 3-1, 4-1 are going to be guys like Mancuso, Johnny, you, and probably Gelch. I think you four are probably all somewhere between 2-1 and 4-1.
I won't say nobody's a 2-1 favorite or a 2-1.
You'd have it, you'd be greater.
That's too high.
Okay, 4-1.
At least 4-1, 5-1, 6-1. Yeah.
All right. So let's say 4-1 for those guys. So then let's just do buckets. So let's say 4-1, 8-1, 12-1. For 8-1, I'm going to put myself, I'm going to put O'Brien, I'm going to put Tim, I'm going to put Rachel, because I know she can do it, as 8-1 odds.
Okay.
And then 12-1, I'm going to say Kat, I'm sorry, sweetie, I'm going to say Kat, Goop.
Our night is sleeping on the couch for Chaz.
Jake, and who else am I missing? Who's the last person?
Goop Cat, Jake, and I don't know. I don't know who else. I don't know who you're going to throw in the 4-1 bucket.
Well, for the 4-1, I had you, Mancuso, Gelch, and
Mike and J-Bone.
Oh, Mike and J-Bone. You know what? Okay, sorry. So this is what's going to happen. So I'm bumping you to 8-1, and I'm putting J-Bone and Mike at 4-1.
Okay.
So we've got
I mean, you are allowed to put people at like 6-1, 7-1, 10-1.
I'm not going to those. I'm not doing that much of a.
You can go in between. It's okay.
I know. All right. What are your odds that you have in your head?
I would put like Joe and Mike and J-Bone at the 4-1 and 5-1 range. I'd put Gelch at like 6-1, 7-1. I'd put Joe Bryan maybe a hair behind Gelch. I'd put myself kind of in that group with Joe Bryan and Gelch as well. I'd put you a hair behind that, because if you come up with some strategy and it comes off like gangbusters, you could easily win the league, but also you could fall flat on your face again. So risk reward,
highly likely.
Then I'd probably just put everybody else at like, you know, 10-1, 12-1 that I didn't name. So
fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. Next question from Mancuso. Who other than yourselves would you most want to see win the title this year? I can't also say Cat, and you can't say Phoenix.
Okay.
You know, I feel like the easy answer is Johnny, because like I know what a good player he is, and I think he probably deserves it. But I'm not going to go there.
You heard it here first. Chaz does not want Johnny to win the title.
I just feel like that's too obvious of an answer.
Go ahead, Chaz. Yeah.
I want somebody who hasn't won. I really don't care. I want somebody who has not won the title before. So theoretically, that could be Goop, because even though Coop's won, Gates is not. I would love to see Rachel win it. I'd love to see me or Kat or Johnny or Joe or Tim, O'Brien or Tim. I want somebody who has not won the league before to win it this year.
Yeah, no, I'm with you that, you know, I'm always in favor of people who have, if I can't win it, I'm always in favor of people who haven't won it, winning it. I guess I would probably go with Johnny or Joe. I mean, Johnny really deserves a title for how consistent he's been. So I'd probably give him my number one vote there.
Okay, fair enough. I think that's the last question. So we'll kind of wrap it up there. I mean, we're just at 40 minutes now, so I think that's a great amount of time. You know, I think in the weeks ahead, we'll start talking more a little bit about, you know, now that we have some preseason games under our belt, we'll talk about that. I think we'll start talking about some positions, you know, our own personal rankings. Is there any other topics that you think we should be covering in the future weeks?
We'll see. We'll see what we can drum up here as camp and preseason rolls along.
I think we should definitely have another guest or two. Maybe we can even.
Oh, talk, we need to. We should get Rachel on. Yes,
yeah, I definitely talk to her into coming on maybe next week even. So yeah, I mean, we definitely have a couple weeks to fill here, and you know, it looks like we should be hopefully have a draft.
I believe that was in her contract that she must do at least one appearance on the Chief and Chaz podcast.
Nice.
So she has to come on the show. Yeah.
All right. Cool. All right. So Chief, any other thoughts for tonight?
Nope, we're good to go.
All right, guys. Hey, thanks so much for supporting us, for supporting the podcast. Please give us 5 stars, and don't forget to subscribe, because I know some of you haven't, and recommend us to your friends, even though they won't know what the hell we're talking about. And we'll see you next time on the Chief and Chaz Power Half Hour.